So, good morning, everyone. So, today we find ourselves really in the heart of this session. And it's a day to really ground ourselves in our practice. I know that for some of us, this is not an easy time. Physical pain, emotional pain, a sense of loss, dislocation in our life. You know, and our Zen practice is not about sugarcoating that. But each of us keeps coming back to the cushion, coming back to be with what arises, and to see what's there. And the commitment that each one of us makes is really what sustains us all. So it was 2 weeks ago from today. It seems like a lot longer. But it was 2 weeks ago that we had our Obon ceremony, a traditional way to remember loved ones who have died. And many of you were here for this. And we made small individual memorials, each with their own wooden frame and votive candle. And we set them afloat in a nearby river while we were chanting. I'm told that the river here in Cornwall is usually a gentle, shallow stream. But it happened that there were just torrential rains that day of Obon. I mean, biblical level downpours, heavy downpours throughout the day. And fortunately, the rain stopped and we were able to get to the river a little later than we planned, but it was about dusk. And what we saw was pretty astonishing. Those of you who were there will certainly remember it, that this stream had been transformed into this raging river. I don't think I'll ever forget that image. The river seemed alive. It was like a giant twisting serpent. This deep water rolling past us. It was a little scary, and it was also pretty thrilling just to be close to that, that kind of primal power of wind and rock and water. And at the same time, I think we couldn't help in seeing that. Seeing these small, fragile lanterns that we put into the water be carried away, just rushed away by this water. It was really visceral. And I think we couldn't help but recognize the fragility and the vulnerability of our own lives and the lives of all beings amidst, as we say in one of our dedications, amidst the wild and unbound nature of this turning Dharma wheel. So this wild and unbound nature can be destructive as it clears away the old. Yet it can also be generative. Who knows what new plants will be on the riverbanks next spring? I think in the midst of this, we realize that we can't hold on to anything in this unfolding of life. So after we walked away from the river that evening, I don't know about those of you who were there, I felt kind of altered from that experience. I felt like you do when you have touched something real and you've really seen a truth in a very deep way for yourself. Because in fact, like those little lanterns, we are that vulnerable. And life is that kind of fast-moving, turbulent water. And who among us, when we think about what we were doing 10, 20 years ago, doesn't feel a little pang? A sense of where did those years go? Mm-hmm. The gulp of life is going by so quickly and so relentlessly. And I think we take that as a deep inspiration for practice. Practice, as it is said, as though we have a fire atop our heads. And at the same time, as Zen practitioners, we can remember that no matter what the conditions of this river, that we're not separate from it. And that eases our fear and our anxiety when we can remember that. Suzuki Roshi uses the analogy of a drop of water from a river going over the edge of a high waterfall. Each of our lives is like this little individual drop of water. He says, when you do not realize you are one with the river, you have fear. But whether it is separated into drops or not, water is water. When the water returns to its original oneness with the river, it no longer has individual feeling to it. It resumes its own nature. How glad the water must be to come back to the original river. So he's talking about our individual lives, but he could also be talking about how we experience that life, the moments of that life, whether we feel separate, or whether we can experience our interconnection and our oneness with this original river. So I was reflecting on some of these various expressions of water, the drops, the streams, the raging river, original river, in light of our Ongo study text, Dotoku, or expressions. We've already heard a lot about Dotoku over the past month. Some of you may have already heard plenty about Dotoku by now. But I wanted to say just a few words about it today because it is a text that can shift our understanding and broaden our Dharma vision. I think Dotoku gives us a lens to see ourselves and to see all phenomena less as fixed objects, more as expression that's flowing and fluid, interconnected, changing. changing with conditions. An oak tree's expression, for example, is acorn and autumn leaf and decaying log melting into the forest floor. And our own individual expression is like this. It's fluid and interconnecting over the course of a day, over the course of a moment. So one of the translations of this word, dotoku, is expressing the truth. And to appreciate what Dogen is offering us in this fascicle, I think it's helpful to look at maybe unconscious assumptions we may have about this word, truth, as in truth with the capital T. Because, you know, if you ask someone about the truth, the first impulse may be to think of something out there, over there somewhere, kind of a thing, an object separate from us. It's the Ten Commandments on a wall somewhere. And in the West, we have a long philosophical tradition with this basis, really going back to the ancient Greeks, such as Plato or even earlier, who taught the truth exists externally from us, outside the human mind. Many of us grew up in religious traditions that would have viewed God in this way, separate, over there somewhere, up there somewhere. But Dogen is coming from a very different place, from the perspective of total non-dualism. He's saying that the truth, or the way, doesn't exist other than being made manifest by each one of us. So if we think of the teachings as outside ourselves, you know, something we're trying to get, something we're trying to understand intellectually, we're missing it. Mm-hmm. We're looking in the wrong place. You know, the truth and expression are one. So when Dotoku begins, the first thing that Dogen tells us is that Buddhas and ancestors are expressions. So it's not something they do. That's just what they are. It's something we are as well. And Dogen tells us that the ancestors asked the question, do you have your expression? Do you have your true expression? Can you express what you have realized? So that's how the ancestors function. That's how they help us. They bring us back to this essential point, to this question. It's a reminder to us. And so who are these ancestors? Well, they include the matriarchs and the patriarchs that we've been chanting every day in the Buddha Hall. And, you know, we owe those ancestors really a tremendous gratitude that they preserved and transmitted these teachings over hundreds and hundreds of years. When I first came into practice, I found the chanting the names of the ancestors was pretty insufferable. I had a lot of suffering as part of chanting the ancestors and their difficult to pronounce names. But now I have really, when we chant those names, I have a deep appreciation of who these men and women were, even though I don't know all of their histories, of course. So those are the ancestors, and yet at the same time, I would encourage you to think about this, because this is Dogen, and we're in this non-dual realm, that the ancestors are not separate from us. that we can be one with Ancestor Mont. So this true expression that Dogen is talking about, you know, when we're being true to ourselves in our own unique way of being, and we're being true to what is asked for in each moment. We could say it's being in tune with life as it is right now. So these teachings from Dogen are very inspiring. But in fact, true expression can be pretty difficult for us. And that's what I want to talk a bit about this morning. I think true expression is really the ongoing work of a lifetime. Because of the many things that cloud and block this expression. So a big one might be what Miyoko Sensei spoke about on Wednesday, the stories that we tell ourselves about who we are, about what's happening to us. And when we're lost in the story, the same old story we've probably told ourselves many times, we can't have our true expression because we're not fully present. We're not fully there. So the haiku master Basho used to encourage his poetry students to see with a fresh eye, because he would tell them, yesterday's self is worn out. You know, and I think of that teaching from Basho, when we do something as simple as tidy up our cushions after zazen before we stand up for kinhin. You know, it's a small task, but we miss an opportunity if we neglect it. You know, we brush away any dust on the cushion, and we brush away that period of zazen. You know, we may have judgments about the quality of that sitting period. It was good, it was bad, it was dreamy, it was whatever it was. But whatever it was, it's gone. Sweep it away so you have a fresh seat ready for your zazen, for your seated mind. So through zazen, what we're really doing is cultivating a mind that is clear enough and is stable enough to be able to see whatever arises. Even those thoughts or voices that Tokyu described yesterday, the kind of subtle ones, the ones that come from 20 feet behind you, but that are messengers, and they need to be heard. I think what we might see in zazen are some of the unconscious patterns the mind falls into. You know, and I think we experience something that is sometimes called selfing. How we create a sense of a solid self out of thoughts, out of conditions, out of phenomena, and then turn it into the story of me. So I'll just give you a little example about this. When I started Zen practice, which was not here, I had a lot of difficulty with liturgy. It just wasn't what I was there for. And I didn't connect with it, and I pretty much suffered through it. But I saw many people around me who seemed to just love liturgy. So what was wrong with me? And so I kind of developed this identity that, you know, I'm just not a liturgy person. And that identity operated for quite a while. And with that identity came a set of strong opinions, such as,
Liturgy is a waste of time. Real action is sitting.
And I didn't really recognize what was going on as opinion. It seemed to be the truth. And I saw myself as a person who knows this truth. There's this constellation going on here of kind of self-creating, self-reinforcing beliefs, thoughts, judgments, opinions, and that is selfing in action. That is how it operates. And it limits us. It's a contraction. So if you pay close attention, you may spot this tendency operating. But I think it can be hard to see. It certainly has taken me a long time to see some of my patterns with this. And I'm still surprised that things come up because selfing is pretty much going on continuously, I think, to some level. But I think the reason it's hard to see through is because this stuff becomes like mental wallpaper. We're so used to it being there, we don't really see it. We don't really hear it. It's a little bit camouflaged. And, you know, we can't make ourselves see it. All of us are here because we want to do this kind of work. We want to see this stuff in action. It's hard to see it operating sometimes. So we can't make it happen, but we can develop the conditions for the seeing to more easily take place, which is what we're doing here. And it can be really surprising and liberating when we see something. Even something that seems relatively small. You know, sometimes gradually, sometimes all at once. Yoko talked about brick by brick. But whichever way it happens, a chunk of this selfing infrastructure, this false self, this piece of the false self, starts to crack. Maybe some of it drops away. And we experience ourselves and the world in a fresh way. So sometimes this can be a little disturbing. Wait a minute. I always thought that was true and that was the way my life is. What's happening now if that's not really the truth? But it can also be so liberating and refreshing for us. So even something small and subtle, that voice that Tokyo described, you know, can lead us to something much bigger. So my suggestion to you today to help us cultivate this is to allow your zazen to be simple, really simple. Just radical simplicity, bare attention. And I'd even suggest to you when you come into the Zendo for what we think is a 30-minute period of Zazen, don't think of it that way, because that's just a concept. It's one more concept we get snarled up in. Instead, my suggestion to you is to make that commitment to be present and to connect with the hara and really just connect with this in-breath. Just this one, not past, not present, not thinking about a stream of breathing or awareness. This in-breath and this out-breath. Nowhere to go. Nothing to get, nothing to achieve,
nothing to see. We can even practice this together right now, keeping that inner focus, staying in the body, staying with the in-breath, staying with the out-breath. You'll find you can keep your focus on that breath, yet still hear perfectly well a Dharma talk in words and a Dharma talk in cicadas. And just let everything come to us. Simple. So I'm supposed to end here, but I have a couple of other things I wanted to say. So with Roshi's permission, maybe I'll just run a little bit over. I want to come back to true expression. And we've been talking about true expression for us as individuals, how difficult it can be. But we recently had a situation within the Sangha that showed how difficult true expression for us can be as a community. I think, as many of you know, two members of our teaching staff recently departed the Zendo. And in the aftermath of this, many of us have been looking deeply at this and asking important questions about ourselves. And did we express what we saw was happening? Or if we didn't, why not? What about now? So what kind of group dynamics, personalities, issues around power, issues around authority, can block the true expression of a community or keep a community locked in a story? So my hope is that we can use the ingredients of this situation to learn more about true expression in our larger body, the body of the Sangha. On the deepest level, I think we yearn to express what is deepest inside of us, our devotion, our vulnerability, our love. And our true expression encompasses all of that, even the aspects it's hard for us to give voice to. It's that inner beauty, that spiritual beauty that I see emanating when we sit together, when we work together in samu, when we chant. It's that inner beauty that shows in creative expression, poetry, painting, and music. It shows in our involvement with social action. Shows in simple acts, when we light a candle or straighten a cushion. So our practice gives us a way to actualize what is inside us. Here's the Zen teacher Jakusho Kwang. He says, "This morning a very small finch visited my window and sang some truly beautiful songs. This is nature's way of just doing without the sense of self. The finch was so small, yet it was able to express such a brilliant and moving song. In fact, the finch became its song. Without thinking at all, expression came directly from its life force. Isn't this what we long to do in our lives? Though they may not be aware of it, this is one of the deepest wishes of human beings everywhere. That's Roshi Kwong. So ultimately, our true expression comes down to how we meet and how we connect with this moment. Our true expression is about intimacy, non-separation, letting go of the small self to become our true self. That's when that true expression manifests naturally. That's the drop of water rejoining the original river.